Thank you once again, Mr. Greer. What did the drummer name his twin daughters? Anna 1, Anna 2. I heard that, Joanne. A group of office workers are getting together to get a card for Boss's Day. Boss's Day is October 16th this year, so if you haven't gotten anything for your boss, you got time. Everyone had signed it except old Joe. Now, Joe was kind of the old curmudgeon of the group, and they kind of knew that it was difficult to get Joe to participate in such things. So it turns out, you know, he was the last one to get the card. So they gave the card to Joe, and they said, hey, when you're done, just seal it up, stick it in the boss's inbox. And he said, I don't know what to say. I can't think of anything. And he said, just think about something that, you know, the boss is really good at, and just write it down. So he did. And about an hour later, they saw Joe being escorted out the front door with all of his belongings. They said, Joe, what happened? He said, I got fired. He said, you got fired? He said, well, what'd you do? He said, I just gave him the card like you said. He said, well, what'd you write in it? He said, well, you said just to write something that, you know, I thought the boss did really well. He said, yeah. So what'd you write? He said, I told him, he said, I've never seen someone so incompetent be able to stay employed so long. He says, your insensitivity knows no bounds, and the thoughtlessness towards your employees is unparalleled. Happy Boss's Day. That's probably not a very good career move, and we've probably all been able to relate to bosses maybe that weren't very good over the years. And particularly, maybe we've known someone who was rather thoughtless at times and weren't very thoughtful of us or of others or their needs. And it's the subject of being thoughtful that I want to approach today. I don't want to look at it so much from a negative perspective. I want to look at it from what it is we might do to avoid being thoughtless and how we can be more thoughtful for others. How to be more thoughtful is what I want to think about today. How to be more thoughtful. Let's begin by really defining what we mean by that. Perhaps maybe it's best done by thinking about what it means to be thoughtless. What it means to be thoughtless. Maybe we're walking into church some morning and we're walking in and we got maybe our Bible in one hand and we got a free hand and we're coming in and Mrs. Moore there, maybe she's got three bags in one hand and her Bible, and she's holding one of her famous cheese balls there. She comes in the door, and you want to go there and get at your seat because maybe you're thinking about something, and so you cut around her, and you go through the door and let the door slam, bam, and cheese ball goes everywhere. It's a terrible loss. Oh, plus, you know, we don't want to hit Mrs. Moore in the face with the door, right? It's a thoughtless thing to do. It's a thoughtless thing to do. You know, we're so focused on ourselves that we don't stop and do a basic courtesy of holding a door open for someone. By contrast, obviously, the more thoughtful thing to do would be to see that there's someone in need and hold the door for them or perhaps offer to help carry something along those lines. Just whatever you do, don't let that cheese ball hit the ground, okay? I like to tease Mrs. Moore about her cheese balls. She, for those of you who may be visitors, she makes a fantastic cheese ball. It's a silly example, but hopefully it makes a point, right? Being thoughtless is just that. Just not giving a lot of thought to a situation. Again, maybe we're hyper-focused on ourselves. Maybe we're running late. Maybe our mind's just preoccupied with another project. Whatever reason, we fail to give thought in a situation where we really should. Now, that's not to say that there aren't a few situations in life where we should be thoughtless. That seem contradictory or confusing? Well, stick with me just a minute. Turn to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10. Matthew 10, and we're going to pick up the story in verse 17. Jesus Christ speaking here says, but beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in their synagogues. You will be brought before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, do not worry about how or what you should speak, for it will be given to you in that hour what you should speak. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. In other words, at that time, of a time of persecution, we shouldn't have to think about things too much. Jesus was preparing his disciples then, he's preparing us now for a time when we may go out, we may be preaching the gospel in a very direct way, or maybe in an inadvertent way. You know, and there's certain things you do, of course, to prepare, but there are also things that you can't prepare for. And Jesus says, I'll give you help in that regard. Luke says a similar thing. If you go to Luke chapter 21. Luke 21, we'll start in verse 10. It's, of course, part of the Olivet prophecy. Luke 21, verse 10, he says, nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes in various places and famines and pestilences. And there will be fearful sights and great signs from heaven. But before all these things, they will lay their hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and prisons. You will be brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. But it will turn out for you as an occasion for testimony. Keep that in mind. Keep that in mind about an occasion for testimony. Therefore, settle it in your hearts not to meditate beforehand on what you will answer. The King James, I believe, says, give no thought. For I will give you a mouth and wisdom, which all your adversaries will not be able to contradict or resist. God will give us the right words at the right time when human emotions may overcome us. Now, of course, there's a prerequisite to that, and that is the fact that we are familiar and we are aware of God's word, that we study it, that it's a part of who we are, what we are. But here it's talking about someone comes to persecute us. And maybe it's not in the form of, you know, national television and being, you know, put on trial. Maybe it's someone, again, in the workplace. And maybe it's not really persecution. Maybe it's just a question. We do need to be prepared. We do need to know some things, why we believe what we believe. But sometimes we get so caught up in, am I going to say the exact right words or not, that we get just kind of overwhelmed by the whole thing. We put a little bit too much trust in ourselves. It's at that point in time you have to consider something about being thoughtful and thoughtlessness. Being thoughtful should be a thoughtless thought. Say that one more time. Being thoughtful should be a thoughtless thought. It should be a part of who we are. It should be ingrained in us that we should be thinking of others. The natural reaction, as we said, about opening a door for someone, just a simple act of kindness, we shouldn't have to think too much about that, right? I think most of us were probably raised in that sort of a scenario. So clearly we see there are different types of thoughtlessness. There's a thoughtlessness where we're really not thinking about others. And then there's a thoughtlessness that comes because it's ingrained in us in a good way, in a positive way, that we are thinking about others. So being thoughtless in that, being thoughtful in that way should be a thoughtless sort of a thought. Turn over to Philippians 2. Philippians 2, verse 3. Common courtesies, like holding a door, you know, those things should be an automatic part of our behavior. But, you know, the deeper act of being thoughtful, that needs to be a part of our behavior as well. And it's in this that we can see that testimony. Think about that testimony that Jesus Christ talked about. Philippians 2, starting in verse 3, says, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition and conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others." At our core, being thoughtful means putting others before ourselves. And while we think of the testimony that Jesus Christ talked about being things like testifying that, you know, he is Lord and Savior, that Saturday is a Sabbath day, I think how we think about others, that's a testimony as well. That's a reflection of Jesus Christ and Christ living in us. It's not always some big, grandiose sort of display of talking about our faith that's a testimony, but how we treat other people, taking time to think about them, that's a testimony as well. Holding a door open again is a good thing. It's a part of being thoughtful, but really being thoughtful needs to go deeper than that. It needs to go deep to the core of thinking about others first. Thinking about others first. Give you an example. There's a guy who is watching the garbage truck come down the road. And it's coming down the road, and he sees it, you know, pick up the garbage. It's one of those fancy smancy trucks that's got the little arm that goes out and picks up, you know, not the old days where the guy goes out and lifts it and throws it in the back. That's every, like, schoolboy's fantasy, by the way, is to be that garbage guy on the back that's, you know, be able to throw things in there and watch him go smash. But now they don't do that anymore. They have those big automated arms. And the guy was watching him pick up this garbage, and he noticed, he knew he had his garbage a little overstuffed. And he noticed that as it went up, some garbage fell out of the can. And he thought, well, I'll have to go pick that out. And it dumped down, and the arm came back and set the garbage can down. And then something surprised the fella, and that was the driver stopped, got out, and picked up the garbage, put it back in the garbage can. He thought, well, you know what? That was thoughtful. I don't have to go and pick it up. Guy didn't have to do that. No, it'll be there next week, so when the garbage goes, I'll be taken care of. Driver got back in the truck and then hit the button again, and guess what? Went ahead and emptied the can again a second time for one simple little piece of garbage. You know, the homeowner, the first one, was impressed. They realized that's a pretty thoughtful thing to do. That was going beyond a mere little pleasantry, right? That was a thoughtful thing to do. And then he realized to himself, you know what? They were thoughtful. I should be thoughtful. You know, if they didn't pick up that garbage, I'd be pretty quick to complain, wouldn't I? So the guy took the step, and he got the number of the truck, and he went in, and he let the company know, hey, this driver went out of their way to do something. Now, the driver had to be on the lookout, right, for a way to be thoughtful there. Sure, part of it, you might say, is doing their job, but they could have easily pretended, and we've probably all had garbage people who didn't put a lot of effort into their job over the years. You know, the driver could have easily just pretended that, oh, I didn't see that, or they could have just thrown it in the, you know, gone the first step and picking the garbage up, throw it in a can and said, oh, that's good enough. But they went the step beyond that. And the homeowner could have thought, you know what? Yeah, you better do that, man. That's your job. You know, but they went a step beyond. They said, you know what? I'm going to show some appreciation for that person. Now, neither one had really anything to gain. And this was more than just a simple how do you do passing in the hallway, right? Both of them took a little time and put some thought out for the other person. Put some thought out for the other person. They esteemed the other more than themselves. You know, the homeowner wasn't too good to say something nice about the garbage person. The garbage person wasn't, you know, too whatever to say, I don't need to do that, that's not my job. They thought about the other person. Being thoughtful isn't just a nice thing to do. Being thoughtful is much deeper than that. In many ways, it's the essence of what Jesus Christ said in Matthew chapter 5. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. We're going to start in verse 38. Matthew 5 and verse 38. Again, Jesus speaking here says, "Have you heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth? But I tell you not to resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him take your cloak also." Christ points out, don't just react to a situation. Don't just react. If someone slaps you, our automatic reaction is probably to reach out and slap them back. But do we ever stop and give it thought? Why'd they do that? Do they have a reason? What are they going through? Did I deserve that smack upside the head? Why did they do it? If someone sues you, perhaps there's merit to it. I talked about this a few weeks ago in a message. You know, some lawsuits are frivolous and people make wild accusations just to try to get attention or money, something like that. But you know, not every accusation that's made against us is false. Sometimes people say things or do things, and it needs to provoke us to think. You get a speeding ticket going down the road, you know, we can sit there and say, "Ah, stupid cop, why couldn't you get that other guy who was going 5 miles an hour faster than I was?" Maybe what we need to be thinking instead is, I probably should slow down. Should provoke us to some thought. Back up in verse 25 here, he says this. It says, "Agree with your adversary quickly while you are on the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge." Still in Matthew 5, by the way. "The judge hand you over to the officer and you be thrown in prison." Christ says, you know, sometimes other people are right and you are wrong. You go through this, and we won't read the rest for sake of time. Verse 27, he talks about, you know, the idea of committing adultery. It's not just a physical act, right? It's what goes on in your heart, or to the point of today's sermon, it's what we think about. It's the thought. What Jesus Christ is speaking very much about in here is the fact that our thoughts matter. Our thoughts really do matter. Verse 41, getting back, we read verse 38 through 40, but getting back to verse 41, says, "Whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too." Thoughtfulness doesn't mean just doing something nice for someone. It means giving thought to what others do. Walking with someone, maybe, in a physical or proverbial sort of a sense, and you're ready to go one direction, they're ready to go another. You know, but maybe they've got a little bit more to say. Maybe they haven't finished expressing what it is they want to express. It's good for us to give some thought and think. Maybe there's something that they want to share with me. Maybe I need to not think about the errands I want to run, or the TV show I want to watch, or the project I want to finish. Maybe I just need to sit right here for a minute and listen, or walk, or talk, or whatever it might be, and give them my full attention. Now, listening to someone's story might lead to a physical act, maybe of service or of gratitude. And those are outward symbols of being thoughtful, and that's good. But that's not the core of being thoughtful. Being thoughtful is taking time to listen to what somebody said and how that provokes us to think. Maybe you hear a sermon that, you know, helps with a question you have, and you go and you tell the person who gave it, "Wow, that's really great. I appreciate that." Well, I mean, it's thoughtful that you told the person that you appreciated their message, okay? But the important part there is that message made you think. It gave you time to be thoughtful about whatever the subject might be. Verse 42 says, "Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away." these actions, these giving and sharing that Jesus Christ outlines here, they are a result of thoughtfulness. Someone comes to us with a situation, and maybe we need to take a little bit of time to think about what it is that we can do to help. It's not always cut and dried, like, hey, can you give me a ride to work tomorrow? Or I'm not feeling well. Can you cook dinner or something like that? Some things are a little more complicated, and they require a little more thought, more than just a few kind words or kind act or holding open a door. With that in mind, I would like to move down to the core of this question, which is, how do I become more thoughtful of others? How do I become more thoughtful of others? Now, notice I didn't say, how do I become more thoughtful for others? Oftentimes we hear something, we hear a situation going on, and we say, okay, well, here's what you need to do. Now, we hear a scenario and we prescribe an action based on our thoughts. But is that really thinking about someone else? Or is that thinking about you and what you would do? How do we think about others? Is it with compassion? Is it with condemnation? Or is it with compassion? Mr. Cimino gave a message a few weeks ago about compassion. How do we think about others? In the time remaining, I'd like to offer three practical tips for thinking, being more thoughtful of others. Three practical tips that will help us be more thoughtful for others. The first is an old piece of advice we've probably all heard a million times. Put yourself in their shoes, right? Put yourself in their shoes. We can all make decisions for what we think is best for someone else's life because we know what we think and we know what we do and we know what's best for us. Or at least we like to think so. But it might not be what's best for the other person. Turn to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16. We'll start in verse 21. Matthew 16 and verse 21. Matthew 16 verse 21 says, "From that time Jesus began to show to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised the third day. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, 'Far be it from you, Lord, this shall not happen to you.' But he turned and said to Peter, 'Get behind me, Satan. You are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men.'" Peter, I think most of us can identify with pretty well. He's of the mindset, ready, fire, aim. Quick to jump to action when he sees something maybe he feels passionate about. Jesus is talking about the fact that he must be crucified, and Peter, in effect, says, "Over my dead body, they're not going to do that." Jesus had to strongly rebuke him. Say, "Peter, this ain't about you. This isn't about what you think. What you think might be best right now. There's something much bigger going on. This is about the plan of God, not about our personal friendship." Peter was trying to walk in Jesus' shoes for him in that instance. This wasn't the last time he tried it, of course. When it came to the arrest of Jesus, a similar thing happened in John 18. John 18, two separate events here, two separate accounts. John 18, verse 7, this is actually at the arrest of Jesus Christ. John 18 and verse 7, the troops had come out with a high priest and the Pharisees sending them and to arrest Jesus. And John 18, verse 7, he says, then he asked them, and he says, whom are you seeking? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus answered, I have told you that I am he. Therefore, if you seek me, let these go their way, that the saying might be fulfilled, which he spoke, of those whom you gave me, I have lost none. Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Peter goes past words this time and reaches for his heater. Quick draw, McGraw goes out there and lops off the ear of the high priest. The father had already laid out a plan. He had, metaphorically speaking, given Jesus the shoes that he was to be walking in. Peter wasn't in those shoes, but in that moment, he saw what he thought was best for the other. He prescribed his own treatment. He pulled out a sword, and he started fighting. Jesus, in verse 11, says, Jesus said to Peter, put your sword into the sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me? That was Jesus' role. That was his shoes to walk in. We see situations all the time, and we think we know what's best. An addict should stop using drugs. Homeless man should get a job. A friend at work should quit living in sin and get married or some such thing. I'm not saying that sin is acceptable. I'm not saying that those things don't have consequences. But what I am saying is take a moment and give thought to what those people are going through in that situation. Maybe they're using and abusing drugs because of some greater emotional pain and torment that they're experiencing in life. Maybe they don't want to do what's wrong by living with this person, but they're afraid that if they broach the subject, it's going to lead to hurt and pain. Again, not justifying sin or any wrong, but I am saying take a moment, think about what somebody else might be, and think about their situation. Rather than giving thought of what they should do, give thought to what they feel. Give thought to what they feel, what they're going through. Why have they done the things they do? God will judge them in his time, and there may be an appropriate time for us to point out sinful behavior. But before you do that, let's make sure we take some time and give some thought to what they experience, what they feel. I by no means am saying that I excel in this area. One of my weaker areas, particularly when I was younger, but it's something I think we all begin to realize is, you know, it's making a judgment is easy. Understanding why people do things they do is a little bit harder. Give thought. Give thought to others what it is they do and why. This leads us to our next tip on being more thoughtful. Rather than thinking maybe about what someone should do, we should ask, what do they need right now? What do they need right now? Let's turn back to the book of Luke, if you would. Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10, we'll pick it up in verse 30. It's a very familiar parable of the Good Samaritan, but I'd like to take a little time and read through it this morning. Luke 10, verse 30. Luke 10, and verse 30. It says, then Jesus answered and said, a certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked, and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went to him, and he bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. On the next day when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, take care of him, and whatever more you spend, when I come again, I will repay you. So which of the 3 of these do you think was a neighbor to him who fell among thieves? And he said, he who showed mercy on him. And Jesus said, go and do likewise. You know, the priest and the Levite would have been honored men among society. Samaritans, if not familiar, were looked down on as sort of half-breed in the Jewish community. Some had lost their way with pagan religion. Yet Jesus Christ, in a shock to his audience, made the Samaritan the hero of the story here. Because rather than appear righteous, rather than say the righteous thing at that moment in time, he thought about what the man needed. What the man needed at that moment was medical attention. He gave up his own animal. He gave up his own resources, the wine, the oil. And then he paid for the cost. The man didn't think really about who this man was, why he had gotten in that situation. Was he being careless? Was he performing some nefarious business out in an area that's, you know, the bad part of town, so to speak? Was this God's judgment being rained down upon this man? He thought, wow, this guy needs some help. When I first started going to camp 10, 15 years ago, probably 1 out of 10 of the kids that I would have came from a non-traditional sort of a home, right? Where it wasn't mom and dad, brother and sister. They had their biological parents and whatnot. As time has gone on, that's increased, probably 20-25%. Even those who come from a quote-unquote traditional home, things aren't perfect. They have challenges. They have unemployed, underemployed sorts of scenarios. And it breaks your heart to see that basically any problem that exists in our world today, eventually we start to see the effects of, even within the body. Those kinds of things happen over time. Again, not saying that is acceptable, not saying that all the situations that led to that are okay or permissible, not going into any of that at all. But what does that teen need while they're at camp? The natural reaction of most staffers, myself included, is to try to fix things, right? Try to fix it. You're not going to fix a teenager's problems in 1 week at summer camp. You can't do it. What you can do, though, is you can provide them something they need for that week. You can provide them a positive, uplifting experience. You can be that male role model if that's what's needed. You can be a system, a network of support and of encouragement. You're not going to fix every problem, but you know what? You can give them what they need for 5-6 days. Maybe they aren't committed to keeping the Sabbath day, but you can show them the benefits of keeping the Sabbath, the blessings that it brings. This particular point does require some discernment. You know, the alcoholic on the street, if you ask them what they needed, they might say, I need another drink. And, you know, that's not the best thing for them at that point in time. What they might need better is a hot meal. We must understand there is a time to practice discretion there. We must ask, what do they need? Does that person need a speech on the evils of alcohol at that time? Or do they need a good meal, get in out of the cold? The Samaritan saw a need. They saw a need, and they filled it. They didn't prescribe judgment. They didn't prescribe an answer. They saw a need, and they filled it. It's not always a public act. It's not always something someone sees. It's not necessarily financial. Sometimes it's not even something that the person that you're being thoughtful of is even aware of. Very often, being thoughtful involves praying for someone. Sometimes it's just that anonymous gift, a silent prayer on their behalf. In our effort to be more thoughtful, resist the temptation to give them what you think they need, and think more carefully, what is it that they need in that moment in time? Final tip I'd like to share today focuses on our words. As I just said, being thoughtful doesn't necessarily mean we have to say something. It means that we can and should be praying for them. Sometimes it's silence. Maybe it's an anonymous donation to a fund or something like that. But very often, being thoughtful requires that we use words. And when we use words, make sure those words are words of life. Words of life. Turn to John chapter 6. Kind of summarize a bit of the story here. Jesus had made the statement about being the bread of life. In verse 44 of John 6, he says, "No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up at the last day." Verse 52, we see the Jewish community was quarreling among themselves, saying, you know, what's he talking about? Let's pick it up in verse 53. Verse 53 says, "Jesus said to them, most assuredly I say to you, most assuredly I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. For my flesh is food indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me, and I in him. As the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so he who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread which came down from heaven, not as your fathers ate the manna and are dead. He who eats this bread will live forever." People had a tough time with what he was saying. They didn't understand it. Verse 60, it says, "Therefore many of his disciples, when they heard this, said, 'This is a hard saying. Who can understand it?'" Some people thought, you know, is he talking about cannibalism here? Cannibalism maybe here? Some people thought, well, who's he talk about that he can give life? Who's he think he is? This is a hard thing. Verse 61, "When Jesus knew in himself that his disciples complained about this, he said to them, 'Does this offend you? What then if you should see the Son of Man ascend where he was before? It's the Spirit which gives life. The flesh profits nothing. The words that I speak to you are spirit. They are life.'" He had said some difficult things to his followers. But go back and notice, starting in verse 53 through 58, how many times life is mentioned. Verse 53 says that unless you do this, you have no life in you. Verse 54 says, "Whoever eats my flesh, drinks my blood, has eternal life." Verse 57, "He who feeds on me will live because of me." Verse 58, "He who eats this bread will live forever." Jesus Christ was giving words of life. Verse 66, "From that time, many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more. And Jesus said to the 12," so now he's down to the core group there. It says, "Then Jesus said to the 12, 'Do you also want to go away?'" Now, some quit because they couldn't handle this. So he turns to that inner group and says, "Okay, guys, what do you want to do? Now, if you're going to get, now's the time to get." Verse 68, Peter says, answer says, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. You know, to Peter's credit, he was quick to, you know, pull out a sword and start cutting. But he was also quick to recognize and get to the root of the matter. You know, no fuss, no muss. He just got down to business. He recognized Jesus Christ was the words of life. He said, where else can we go? Christ and Christ alone are the door, is the door, rather, that you and I can enter salvation through. You and I can't be that for others. He is the bread of life. But you know what our thoughtfulness should include and what we can learn from this? Is that our words need to give life, not death, not condemnation, not judgment. Some examples of words of death versus words of life. Maybe on an important phone call and the kids are being loud, words of death might be, shut up, why do you gotta be so inconsiderate while I'm on the phone? Words of life would be, please be quiet, I can't hear, could you maybe play in another room? Another scenario. Your brother buys a new Mustang, or slightly used Mustang with a turbocharged four-cylinder. Words of death might be, you should have got a V8. Words of life would be, you know, that's a great package of performance and fuel economy. A friend gets word their company is shutting down and they'll be losing their job. Words of death would be, oh, that's terrible. Do you think you're going to lose your house too? Words of life might be, oh, I'm sorry to hear about that. I'll be praying for you. Your pastor's favorite football team loses a Super Bowl for the third time. Words of death might be, well, your guy's offensive line really stinks and you can't do anything against a West Coast offense. Words of life might be, wow, Joe Burrow is an amazing quarterback and you'll be back next year. I try to have fun with a few of those, as you can tell. You know, we don't have to gloss over difficult things or pretend that they didn't happen. But we can put some thoughts into our words. We can choose words that are uplifting and encouraging and that give life. Now, a caveat to this is that we've probably all maybe overthought things. Say, well, I was going to call. I just didn't know what to say. I was going to send a card, but I didn't want to say the wrong thing. I couldn't find your address. Harken back to what Jesus Christ said. He said, when the time comes and you can't find the words, God's Spirit will give them to you. And you know the old saying, right? Maybe you don't get the words exactly right in your card. What do you say? It's the thought that counts. It's the thought that counts. Some situations, there aren't any perfect words to say. I've had phone calls where all I could say was, I'm so sorry. And there weren't really anything else. I didn't know what to say. If we happen to be on the receiving end of some words that aren't perfect, by the way, be gracious and understand that knowing exactly what to say is not always easy. But know that the other person, by virtue of the fact that they're talking to you, they're giving some thought to you. It's also worth mentioning that we don't have to wait till something bad happens to be thoughtful. We don't have to wait for something bad happen to be thoughtful. Going back to the example of camp, there's what's called seven elements of the zone. We talk about being in the camp and being in the zone. And a couple of those elements that we try to emphasize at camp are success and support. You know, and that can apply to somebody who maybe they're trying to do something, climb a rock wall, and they're not doing it and they're struggling with it. And you say, you can do it, go for it. You know, those are words of life, right? That's a good example. But we don't have to wait till somebody's struggling. Maybe, you know, you noticed a piece of artwork and you say, wow, that's a really nice combination of colors. Maybe giving gratitude, thanks to a teen who decided to do special music. Or like the fellow who gave the compliment to the garbage truck driver, right? You know, it wasn't anything bad going on. It was something nice. But it took some thought. It's not always necessary to use words when being thoughtful. But oftentimes, those two things do go hand in hand. When we do use words to express thoughtfulness, let's put enough thought into it that the words we give are uplifting and encouraging, and that they're words of life. They're not downtrodden, discouraging, or words of death. Being thoughtful is a really important aspect of being a Christian. In some ways, being thoughtful should be automatic, opening a door. Like a reflex, it should be what we do to esteem other people over ourselves. Sometimes it takes a little more work than that. In order to be thoughtful, we must, by definition, think about others. We need to put ourselves in their shoes, maybe think what it is they're feeling and why. We need to consider what it is that they really need, not just what we think they need. And when it's time to actually use words, well, whether they're spoken, whether they're written down, our words should be of life and encouragement, not words of death and condemnation. Being thoughtful encompasses far more than just simple pleasantries and compliments. It involves taking time to actively think about others. May we all become more thoughtful in both our words and our deeds.